Hello and welcome to Trailmix by Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dusty. If you're joining us for the first time, Trailmix is the short format episodes of our show. While our long format episodes explore one hiking trail in one national park, one park at a time, Trailmix allows us to dive deeper into the things we didn't get to cover in our long format episodes, including interviews, history, science, and environmental justice.
That's right, and since we'll be spending a lot of time in the desert landscapes this season, this Trail Mix episode is all about water conservation in the desert. So what are some things, do you think, that plants and animals do to help conserve water in the desert?
Well, I know they absorb water, a lot of them, and they sometimes will trap water in their roots, like especially in situations where they don't get a lot of rain, they'll just sort of like absorb it for long periods of time and keep it in there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Just like when I'm at school and I have to hold it because I can't go to the bathroom for three periods in a row.
Because that's absorb what it is to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you're saying three 50-minute classes in a row.
Yeah. 54 minutes.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let's start by first establishing what a desert environment is and how it's formed. A desert is a barren area where little precipitation occurs. Most arid deserts in the world can be divided into three categories, from semi-arid to extremely arid. To codify that, extremely arid lands have 12 consecutive months without rain, while semi-arid lands have between 250 and 500 millimeters of rain a year. What makes a desert is a lack of precipitation. However, those factors may vary. In the case of many deserts, mountain ranges are to blame for the lack of rain, as north to south running mountain chains often disrupt the flow of precipitation.
If a mountain range with north to south running mountains has winds that blow perpendicularly at it, the storms that approach these ranges often lose their steam.
Actually, it's moisture.
As the air is forced up and over the mountain into cooler sections of the atmosphere. Cold air does not hold as much moisture as warmer air, and therefore, ranges often have a giant impact on the way in which a desert can form and be maintained.
Other areas in the world, including the Sahara and Antarctica, which is considered a cold desert, actually have different conditions which have formed these deserts and maintained them. In the Sahara, a semi-consistent high pressure holds over the region, which doesn't allow for the shifting temperatures that allow for the formation of clouds and rain. And in Antarctica, a similar semi-permanent high-pressure system dominates as well, causing a lack of precipitation on the continent.
Well, it is interesting to note that Antarctica is a cold desert. We will actually spend this episode talking about arid deserts, like the ones in Death Valley, White Sands, and Saguaro National Parks, as they are parks we will be highlighting this season.
And while deserts may be considered on a scale of aridness, that does not mean that they are completely without water, as some sources aside from rainfall, including rivers, oases, lakes, groundwater, fog, dew, and water vapor adsorption, allow for moisture content within these dry spaces. Fog, dew, and adsorption are three of the most common ways in which deserts can regularly receive moisture. So, how do plants and animals that survive in the desert actually make it through? Considering that water is an essential part of all life on Earth, and in deserts, there is very little of it. Well, there are actually a lot of ways that these flora and fauna have come to evolve and adapt in their environments, making their environs livable. Let's start by looking at plants.
Let's break plants down into a few categories. First, wildflowers, cacti and succulents, trees and shrubs, and grasses, mosses, and lichen. Some things to think about with each of these categories of fauna is succulents, the physical makeup of the plant and physical and chemical defenses. Let's chat about succulents.
Mm-hmm. I think you can do a better Hannibal Lecter.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Succulents.
Okay, that was better. Yeah. You needed to say it to get into
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
Succulents refers to the water storing capacity of plant tissues that allow them to tolerate and endure arid landscapes. Think of that succulent plant that you have at home that you probably killed. I mean, that is doing great, sweetie. If you were to squeeze your jade plant or aloe vera that is sitting in your kitchen window, chances are the plant will feel plump and even squishy. That is water content inside those cells, baby. Keeping that plant hydrated even if you or the desert can't.
That's because these types of plants have adapted to absorb as much water as possible when it is available and to use their energy wisely. Part of that wise energy use is all about keeping their stomates closed at night.
You better keep your stomates closed until you're living on your own and can take care of yourself.
Well, thankfully, stomates are just pores. I said pores, which are on plants and help to regulate the exchange of CO2 and oxygen when photosynthesis is doing its thing. In order to better conserve energy, stomates are closed during the day on these desert plants to not allow moisture to escape during the heat of the day. And they use stored CO2 during the day to enact photosynthesis and open the stomates at night to exchange the oxygen, which comes with some moisture loss.
The physical makeup of plants of the desert is also incredibly important, including a reduced amount of leaves and stems that help to create shade, pale leaves and stems, waxy coatings, and hairs or fuzz on the leaves. Sleek, sheer, and not taking no for an answer, desert plants refuse to quit.
The reduced amount of leaves, shade-producing parts of the plants, and pale leaves all relate to water conservation and helping to keep the sun off the plants at the hottest part of the day. This in turn helps the plants to retain more water, either through not expanding energy on unnecessary parts of the plant or through blocking the sun.
The waxy coatings and hair or fuzz on the leaves also impacts the moisture content of the plant. The hairy or fuzzy leaves help to collect moisture and shield the plant from the sun, even minimally, while the waxy coating helps to prevent plants from drying out.
Sometimes these types of plants develop greater physical defenses, like cacti, in the form of barbs or areoles. Along with helping to collect moisture, like the small hairs or fuzz on other desert plants, these defenses allow these potential sources for water amongst desert animals another thought before trying to collect water for themselves.
Speaking of animals, there are a number of ways that animals have adapted to these harsh climates. A lot of it, like with plants, has to deal with when they are most active, because water is used in the cooling process. Think sweat. Most animals are not day dwellers. They're like vampires.
No, they're nocturnal, or they're crepuscular, which means they only come out at dawn or dusk, which are times when it may be warm or warming, but it is nowhere near the heat of the day. In fact, for people who live in the desert communities, they too are often nocturnal or crepuscular, especially in the heat of the summer.
Crepuscular.
Exactly. Tired.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
While avoiding daytime. Exactly. Hey y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right, it's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season 1 is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
While avoiding daytime heat is important, there has to be a safe place to do it, like a burrow or a microclimate. Many desert animals spend their day below ground or out of the sun in a microclimate, sometimes of their own making. Below the ground, the temperature is much more moderate than on the surface, allowing these animals to beat the heat, retain water, and stay cool. Some animals even find or create microclimates like the shade of a north-facing cliff or a den made of desert plant life. These spaces enable safe passage through the heat of the day and often safety from any kind of lurking predator, no matter the time. Another way that animals have adapted to desert conditions and the lack of water is by not drinking much at all. Some animals are small enough or adapted enough to only get their water content from what they eat, which cuts out the middleman and the waterhole conversations they have to endure.
The body makeup of desert animals also plays a factor, as lizards have tougher, thicker skin, which doesn't allow for much water to escape, and desert mammals have evolved to have fewer sweat glands than their counterparts that live elsewhere in the world.
Some desert animals even employ evaporative cooling, though it comes at a cost, as this also means a negative balance in the available water the animal has. Animals like birds and jackrabbits radiate heat, allowing them to cool naturally by dumping the excess heat through bare, scaly legs, in the case of birds, or ears, in the case of jackrabbits. This provides less of a water deficit for the animal while still allowing them to cool.
Like their fauna counterparts, desert animals have become wise to the ways of working to conserve and retain the water that they have. In such harsh environments, in order to survive, these necessary adaptations help to ensure survival. But how have desert communities adapted?
The harshness of the desert makes it an interesting place for people to set up homes and communities. Yet, around the world, this is the case. There is a lot to understand regarding how to live smarter in the desert. But there are more than a few ways that communities around the world have figured this out by rethinking city planning, conserving water, and using water efficiently.
In regards to city planning, heat tends to build in more urban areas where buildings, roads, parking lots, and the crush of people help to hold and generate heat. Rural areas, because of greenery and lack of population and buildings, tend to have much lower temperatures. City planning in these areas, now and in the future, looks at how to lower the temperatures in urban areas through the dichotomy of natural and human-made spaces, through using different types of construction materials, green building, landscaping, and lighter colors to help lessen the heat of the environment.
In regards to conserving water in desert communities, the needs are similar to that of plants and animals. Residents of desert communities are encouraged to harvest water through rain for future use in their gardens and yards, of which have way less decorative greenery and shrubs than non-desert communities. Communities are even encouraged to use gray water, dishwater, bathwater, to aid in conserving and reusing water for future purposes.
And when it comes to using water efficiently, it means thinking about water as a precious resource which should not be used and abused. Taking shorter showers, thinking about which clothes actually need to go through the wash, and being mindful about the tap being on for too long are all ways you can think about your consumption in an efficient way. Communities even use wastewater recycling, which allows communities to recharge their aquifers.
The use of this recycled surface water allows the underground aquifers to be replenished. And it also prevents saltwater incursion in the groundwater. This means the water in these communities continue to be safe for human use.
Life in the desert is a delicate balance of having and not having. These adaptations in the plant, animal, and human communities have figured out ways to survive and in some cases thrive in spaces that are not the most forgiving.
The sources for this episode include What Desert Cities Can Teach Us About Water by Rudri Patel from Jaister Daily.
Plant Adaptations to Dry Environments from thehuntington.org.
Passive Water Harvesting by Desert Plants and Animals, Lessons from Nature by Dev Guerrera and Bharat Bhushan from the Royal Society Publishing.
What Types of Adaptations Must Desert Animals Make to Conserve Water by Mara Dolph from seattlepi.com.
The Desert Adaptations of Birds and Mammals by Peter Siminski from the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum.
And now, let's end this episode with a game. All All right, so this game I took from a section of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, specifically the stanza, water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink. And so you are going to be completing the initial part of that phrase, the water, water part of that, with the clue that I'm giving you for the rest of the phraseology there of the stanza.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll figure it out as you go.
You will figure it out as you go. Blank, blank, everywhere, and not a glass to clink, said the solo guest at the wedding.
What is a champagne flute? Champagne flute.
You could say champagne, champagne.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Great. You got it.
Great.
For 100. For 200. Blank, blank, everywhere, and not a thought to think, said the teachers at school, because all their students did was watch TikTok in class.
What is brains... brains everywhere, or potential, potential everywhere, and not a thought to think?
I mean, I'll take it. I was thinking smartphones, smartphones everywhere, and not a thought to think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Or cell phones is what I would have taken.
Okay.
Hence the TikTok clue.
Got it.
Great. For 300. Blank, blank, everywhere, and not a crime to link, said the detective who, despite excellent work, couldn't tie the knife, bloody footprint, or camera footage to the suspect.
What is clues, clues, or evidence, evidence, everywhere?
Exactly. For great. 300. For 400. Blank, blank, everywhere, and not a rube to jinx, said the witch whose spell work and incantations weren't working.
What is hex, hex, everywhere?
Exactly. Or curse, curse, everywhere.
Great.
Curse, curse. Mm-hmm. And for 500. Blank, blank, everywhere, and not a skunk to stink, said the man whose stomach was feeling upset in a car full of friends.
What is farts, farts, everywhere?
That's right.
And not a skunk to stink.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.